Hello, and thank you for having a listen to this week's episode of Secure Insights with NDK Cyber. This week, very excited to be joined by Shahar Demai. Shahar Demai heads up marketing for an organization called Cydome. Cydome specializes in the world of keeping shipping and maritime industry secure. Now, as of recording, this is the first episode where we've really delved deep into the maritime industry specifically. So we go here from where they're at in terms of their digital transformation, where they're at in terms of the big events that have recently happened that have caused quite a stir from a cybersecurity standpoint, right through to the regulations that are coming in and what you can do about them. So I think there's a lot of value here if you're in the maritime space, if you're in the shipping space, if you have an interest in that world, or just generally for a bit of knowledge gain as well. So really keen to share this one with you and open to feedback as always. Well, Shahar, thank you so much for jumping on and joining today. It's good to have you on. I'm quite excited to get stuck into this one. So I guess just for context, are you okay to give the listeners a brief overview of your background and what you do?
Sure. So first of all, of course, thanks for having me. It is exciting. Maritime cybersecurity is exciting. But before we go into all the details of that, so my name is Shachar Dumai, Shachar in Hebrew. Running the marketing for Cydome, we're a maritime cybersecurity company. I'm coming with, I don't know, 15, 20 years in marketing, various backgrounds, cyber, security, telecommunications, aviation, and others, both in startups but also enterprise companies. And for the past 7 months, I'm leading the marketing for Cydome. Cydome is an Israeli startup, but it's, I would say, a little bit more mature than just the pure what you think about when you what you think of when you think startup, that focuses specifically, primarily, not primarily, but only on cybersecurity that is dedicated for the maritime industry.
And so I'm quite excited to get into this one, as I mentioned. And it's I think it's we've done a few episodes now with different folk from the OT and the ICS cybersecurity space, but we haven't really delved into sort of the maritime and the shipping space. So really excited to do that with yourself. So just before we go into all of the cybersecurity, I guess, concerns and how you sort of knit into that bigger picture, but the driving force around digital transformation in the maritime industry, it's slightly behind, would you say, where other industries could have been or have been recently?
Yeah, so you see, it's an industry that has been around for 5,000, 10,000 years, right? And it's
Yeah, wow.
evolving all the time. A lot of the major, I would say, technological advancements in the world have been in maritime. It was like it's such an important, not a catalyzer, but it's such an important, not just the driver, it's an engine of the economy for so many years. So even today, between 80 to 90% of all the goods in the world travel by sea at some point. So you can
Wow.
imagine that just the contribution, it's not just driving, it is the engine of the economy. So the impact, whether but on the other hand, because it has been around for so long, I think it's an industry that is kind of not in the shadows, but it's kind of, yeah, we know what it's doing. So people tend to think of maritime as something that has been around, is around all the time and just does its thing. But we do see in recent years a lot of changes. One of them, of course, is digitalization. It's probably one of the last major industries that have not yet undergone the full digital transformation. And what does this mean? Let me just give you one example. So if you take a big ship, let's say a cruise ship or a major container ship, sometimes just the maneuvering, just the navigation of taking the ship into the dock itself in the port, something that can take many hours. It's very delicate and it's very hard. I mean, you can't really brake, right? Because you have an engine that pushes you in one direction and then you need to reverse. And so the entire think about the safety of how do we not crash into the port. Think about how to take thousands of containers on the ship. You know exactly which container is where it's going, which one needs refrigeration, which one doesn't. On the one hand, we have the whole world of safety, of course. We have the world of the supply chain becoming more digital. So ships and the maritime industry by itself needs to be more digital to support the customers. And then we have another aspect of efficiency And also efficiency in terms of environmental, what we call the decarbonization. As an industry, polluting, there is an impact, environmental impact of ships, and there is regulation to reduce that that impact, that carbon footprint of ships. So that's they're also very dominant. One way to do it is to implement more sophisticated ways to run all the machinery of the ship. And this means also implementing more digital systems, digital equipment. All of those are drivers for the digital transformation of ships. On the other hand, what's also, I would say, accelerating that transformation is the change in bandwidth, in the connectivity of the ships. So in the past, and this is funny, you know, you have broadband at home, maybe you have fiber to the home. Ships until 2 years ago, on average, commercial ships, commercial vessels had about 1.5 megabit connection. We're talking about,
wow,
you know, dial-up for the 90s.
I was just thinking, yeah. It must be the whole, if somebody's on the phone, you can't use the internet type thing.
not something that you can really, I don't know, Netflix and chill. and then came Elon Musk and SpaceX, Starlink, their LEO, low Earth orbiting satellite network that actually made it much more accessible to get connectivity that is both 10 times and even 100 times faster than before in terms of bandwidth. So we can talk easily about, you know, 100 megabit and even cheaper. So suddenly the ships need to be more connected. The connectivity is much better. And the missing piece, the missing, you know, the last part of that triangle is, okay, but this is also becoming much more prone to cyber attacks because you have more digital on the ship. It's not like in the past they said, yeah, but the ship is not connected, so I don't really need to worry about cyber attacks. And if the bandwidth is low, then okay. So again, it's not a main, not a major concern. And we actually see it when we look at how cyber attacks are evolving. I would say in the past 3 years, not only do we see that huge increase in the amount of cyber attacks on maritime companies, on the companies, on ships, on ports, we also see that they're getting more sophisticated. So one thing that we did the research in October, that during September, October 2023, there was an attack every 3 days on a maritime company.
Wow.
So it is something that is happening. And, you know, maybe just a few examples of things that happened recently. So I would say publicly, that received a lot of public awareness, or two attacks on ports. One was last month in Australia. So a company called DP World was hacked, was shut down for a few days. The company handles 40% of all containers coming in or going out of Australia. So a single hack was able to shut down the operation of 40%. Now, Australia is an island country. So you can imagine that, you know, a lot of them, I mentioned 80, 90% of the goods travel by sea, but this is even more prominent because everything has to be shipped, either flown in or shipped to Australia, unless, of course, you grow something there. So so it's a major impact, and it did receive. It was considered as a national incident, not some private company problem, right?
Yeah. Not just like a ransomware, we've got your data, pay us and we'll give it back type thing. It has bigger implications than that.
The other one, and this is just a recent, another incident also involving a port was in Japan, a port of Nagoya. It's the biggest port in Japan, another island country. And again, it was shut down for 4 or 5 days. This is the port, this is the gateway of Toyota factory to the world.
Oh, wow. Right.
So you can imagine that the impact of this, you know, a single vessel can be worth $500 million. So imagine how much goods you have on a single container ship. when it's stuck. Think about the port of the Suez Canal when the other ship that was stuck. It created an impact on the global economy. 2 weeks it was stuck there. So naturally, we see that this is why shipping companies, ports, the entire maritime industry is considered as critical infrastructure. And indeed, we see those trends. On the one hand, it's as an industry, it's becoming more and more digital, more connected. But then now it's slowly picking up also. How do we also protect all of this from cyber attacks as well?
Understood. And it seems to be, like you said before, it's sort of maybe behind some other industries that have made the transition, that have got more connected a bit quicker. And other industries have found that maybe, security wasn't built into the design of their technology initially. It wasn't really a concern, like you said before. Is shipping in the same sort of space? Is there any difference there really? Or is it in that case of, look, we've had this technology for maybe have the technology for 10,000 years or so, but we've had the technology for the last 50 years or so. It doesn't break too much. So then it's trying to apply security on top of that rather than building security in at the moment.
It's a very good question. And that's so the short answer is yes, we need to build the security on top of whatever is existing right now. It just because the pace of replacing vessels is very, very slow. So if you're looking at even some of the biggest shipping companies, their fleet can be easily 10, 20 years old. So it just even if you want to replace it, and it is being replaced, and we'll talk about it, but the pace of change is very slow. It's a very, I would say, conservative industry. Everything is high cost to do anything that you want to do. So naturally, you need to build, mostly build right now on top, but also start now because the awareness is starting to get there. Start to plan, okay, so how do I build that security by design into the design of the newer ships? Of course, one of the buzzwords in this industry is autonomous shipping, but that's, it will take time. It's not there yet. If we're looking at, for example, how the regulators are treating this, they are implementing the first step is what you could call security by design, which is regulations that mandate what type, how, and what type of cybersecurity measures you need to implement into new builds of ships. This is, I would say, more stricter regulation than the regulation on existing ships, but it is picking up. We have two, I would say, we can talk about two main regulations right now that are kind of mandating cybersecurity for ships.
Sure.
One
And this is
is
just for
starting.
new, is this for new ship builds or is this for
So, so
existing
one
fleets?
starts with you.
Okay.
Sorry, one starts for the new build. This is what's called the IACS Unified Requirements E26, E27. This mandates not only the new build, it's the entire life cycle of the vessel from the minute that you sign a contract for building the new, for commissioning or for building the new vessel throughout the build, design, build, and then the operation. Okay, so this is one regulation. The other one is the European, and by the way, this is for basically the entire industry. So it's the other one is a European Commission regulation that both of them will take come into force next year. So the IACS one was postponed to July 1st. The other one is from what's called NIS 2, not to be confused with NIST, the American NIST.
I was just thinking there's
So,
a few acronyms that are crossing over a lot here, but okay, cool.
which are both cybersecurity frameworks for
Yes.
that are relevant, but anyway, so NIS 2 is a regulation from the European Union that imposes requirements on critical infrastructure. So that covers all of the shipping industry, basically, that is working within the European Union. So this also covers the existing ships as well, not just the new builds. And it's, I would say there's a lot of overlap, and the requirements come with the same, not only mindset, but the frameworks are pretty similar. Of course, there are some differences.
So these regulations and requirements are coming through. Would you say, knowing this area like you do, would you say these are a easy fixes to make, or is this a big sort of upheaval of the process we've done over the last 100 years, for example?
Yeah, so it's a major change. I'm of course generalizing right now, but let's say that, look, even today, ships have some, even at home, you have some form of security measures like a firewall, antivirus. So there are some existing measures for many years. It's not like this is completely new, but it's very, I would say, rudimentary, and it's also not built for maritime. We'll talk about that in a second. Because an AS2 is really focusing on that. First of all, both of them introduce the requirement to use real-time monitoring, testing that are more comprehensive, risk management approach. So both regulations mandate a more thorough, I would say, cyber framework be implemented. And by the way, both follow the NIST, the American NIST, in terms of the framework that they're using and the terminology and all that. So yeah, instead of firewall antivirus, not enough. You need to be proactive in identifying all your assets. You need to map out your assets. You need to do risk analysis, risk management. You need to implement real-time measures to for preventing attacks. And then you need to have protocols for what happens if there is an attack. So this is for both of them. What's interesting about NIS2, first of all, is that they follow the GDPR, the privacy rules, in terms of heavy fines and personal liability. They're potentially not complying with NIS2 could lead to very heavy fines, up to 2% of the turnover of the company.
Which is a big hole.
Exactly. It's for the IOCs. IOCs is a regulating body within the maritime industry, so you do need to have compliance in order to operate your ship at sea. So there's also teeth there, but it's different. Like you cannot go to sea if you don't get certified by a certification body, and they would check that you have whatever is required. As opposed to NIS2 telling you need to have ABC, and if not, then you'll get a fine. The other one is that NIS2 also, they have this body, a organization called ENISA, ENISA, which is I don't recall exactly the acronym, but it's basically the Cybersecurity Institute for the European Union, and they specifically say that they want to build a cyber risk database for the critical infrastructure, which is really important because then they're saying, okay, we're not only telling you you need to be proactive in the way that you approach cybersecurity, you're going to take part, it's a collaboration between the government, universities, as well as the private sector. This is kind of their vision of creating knowledge sharing between all the relevant companies in order to have more knowledge specific for critical infrastructure. And this goes back to your question that so what's the difference? And the big difference is that, okay, when I had a firewall and antivirus, it used to be just like a generic firewall, just like any other firewall. Like no one built a firewall that's dedicated for ships. What we understand today is the technical, the IT and OT environment on board the ship is very complex. And the fact that you have some firewall that was designed and it was built for like an office use case, thinking, okay, I need to protect two laptops, three servers, and 15 mobile handsets, that's not a ship, right? This is not how a ship looks like. Today, when you ask me, okay, so what's the difference between a before and after? That in order to really comply and be able to map out your all the assets on board the ship, you need to understand, you need a solution that can really understand and is built for the environment of the type of equipment And when I'm saying equipment, so ships have, they have IT, they have servers, they have computers, they have email, operational email, but they also have, and let's talk about OT a little bit. So the OT is very different. Some of it is not connected. Some of it is connected in hindsight. Some of it is connected and using some all forms of protocols that could be it could be proprietary, could be standard, but standard as in standard for the industry. And some of them are more IoT devices that are really TCP/IP. So more of internet, regular internet communication, like security cameras. Okay, for example. You have to understand that replacing an OT device is, if I have, I'm a mid-sized shipping company, I have 50 ships, and I want to replace, I do have an older, I don't know, some control, some management system that I need to replace, whether it's a fire management, engine management, something that I need to replace on, in the office world. Okay, I need to update and patch all the laptops. So one by one, it takes a day, a week. Sometimes it's, it's us. I can do it centrally where you have management systems. OT are usually devices that are embedded. It's not something that if I need to connect remotely, I need to open a specific remote connectivity. I need to get a technician on board. The ship needs to go to the port. So I need to wait for the ship to arrive to the port. In the port, the time window that they have to spend in the port is very limited. It's counted by hours. And if I'm missing, if I'm overstaying, it's tens of thousands of dollars for each hour. So it's very difficult from an operational perspective, an operational point of view. And especially if it's like an equipment from 15 years ago, even if I want and I have the budget and I'm already bought the new equipment, now replacing 50 is something that can take months. So the operational side of how do I build my cybersecurity as a program also is really important. And the solutions need to support that as well. Now I'm saying, and of course, when the ship is at sea, there is no cyber expert on the
Yes.
ship. There is no IT manager. There's nothing. There's like the captain, the crew. So I need something that can, on the one hand, work, I would say, autonomously or very automatic, zero touch, all of that on the one hand. On the other hand, like I said before, be able to augment cybersecurity on top of existing legacy devices, but also support the new, more secure, built for a security, the digital system that I'm implementing more and more now.
Of course, I was just going to say, even if you take something the regulations are asking for, real-time monitoring, for example, this is no, that's not as a quick fix type thing. It's not sort of just a, like you say, we can just do a SaaS deployed patch overnight and it's all done. So it seems to be that if you take people, process, technology to change things, it sounds like this, the technology that's out now could really help comply with these maritime and OT regulations that are coming in.
Absolutely. And calling for technology. They actually pretty much say it, out loud. You mentioned the people process technology. I think, first of all, what's really important is that the shipping companies change the mindset. One of the things is that they need to start manage, and they have the management, the executives have a personal liability here. They need to understand that they're managing cyber programs. So it's not something there, yeah, my IT manager is handling it. So one thing is changing the mindset, be able to create a culture in the company that cybersecurity not a built inside the design of the ship itself, but built inside the design of the company.
And we
Educate the people, educate the people, be able to run risk management programs, track them, measure them. This is something that technology help. Because otherwise, and of course, because you have so many new threats, you need to do prioritization. You need to work into what we call it transition from managing the devices to managing the threats, right? Some things you can't control, but you can control what are the threats, what are the vulnerabilities that you're that you have, map them out, get the technology that can automate. This is exactly why we built Cydom, to be able to detect maritime technologies, maritime equipment, map them out, help adopt a cyber risk approach to assessing risk for each and every device. And now you get 2,000 alerts. So what do I do with this? How do I prioritize that? How do I build a plan for improvement? How do I assess the impact? How do I, sometimes if there is an OT device that I cannot replace, there are other things that I can do to mitigate that risk, whether it's network segregation, whether it's other, like changing the rules in my monitoring, whatever. But build a holistic system around it, and as in every program, you need to start it from the top, from the top executives, that they need to start adopting. So another thing that the technology can help, in addition, of course, to the protection itself, is give the IT manager or the cybersecurity managers of shipping companies the tools to bring cybersecurity as something that the management can review. And that's not a firewall. That this is not the traditional cybersecurity tools. You need to bring something that they can take to their CEO and say, look, this is where we are. This is the budget I need. Here's how we're going to track changes. Because eventually you're responsible for this. And here are the tests that we need to do if we're building a new ship. Here are the programs that we need to adopt if this is an old ship and so forth. And build it into a culture that you can share with the CEO, with the head of operations, a training program for the staff, for the crew, and so on.
Understood. So it sounds like from what you're saying here is it's that there tends to be a little bit of pushback or not as much buy-in maybe to invest in this technology as maybe there should be. But clearly, Cydome, for example, are a company that's been going a little while now. They're doing well. So there is a method of getting buy-in to get this technology in. Is there any, maybe not naming names, but have you seen it done particularly well? Is it a case of getting those high-level stats together to go to the board, to go to CIO, to CEO level, and say, look, this bit of technology here will not only make us comply with the regulations that are coming through, but also it changes our numbers drastically, so we're safer or we reduce risk. And I don't know. Have you seen any particular success stories when it comes to getting that buy-in from the upper board level?
So, first of all, I know about Cydom. This is how we present it to our customers. By the way, they are saying it. This is exactly what our customers told us. Look, you changed. Not only you helped us become more secure. We have one is the head of security for, I would say, mid-size or relatively large a shipping company, and he said that you helped us change the way that we communicate cybersecurity with non-technical people. And this is like a major change. That was a major change in the company. So
Wow.
what we do, we work with the IT manager, the security managers. We provide them one risk score that kind of aggregates the entire fleet, not only even one vessel.
Okay.
This is another major change because usually a lot of the time you focus on one vessel, saying, okay, how do I assess the entire vessel. But then if you're buying equipment, you're buying it across your fleet. So it's not just on one vessel. So the cybersecurity program needs to be not per vessel, but for like in a view that is holistic for the entire fleet. So we give them the ability to measure risk after assessing, identifying all the inventories, assessing vulnerabilities, assessing risks, prioritizing, and then they can measure it over time. And if it's and we can show them, okay, look, in one example, we had a project with a customer to kind of to show what, how can we improve? That was the question. And then we improved like 90% of the vulnerabilities were gone,
90%.
90%
Wow.
with zero critical alerts. So you can see the improvement, you can measure it, and you can even show it to the top management. And it's, I, yeah, in companies where they don't have big budgets. So they're not tech companies, right? They're not like the profit margin. They're operating companies, so the margins are low, and of course they're hesitant into investing something that is perceived as a cost center,
It's a
right?
cost, yeah. Yeah.
It's a, they so yeah. So we show them. We help them to build the programs. We give them our expertise to work together with them to solve the problems. We get the feedback from them to implement additional, whether it's features or change things, and sometimes to add, sometimes to remove, to simplify, and basically build this to be as simple as possible for them to manage their cyber risk.
Wow, that's awesome. Like you say, they're 90%. That person who was talking about changing the culture and how they view security. So it's there's clearly a need for it. So I guess it's just about getting that that buy-in off the ground initially. So
Exactly.
heading through. So we're at the start of 2024 now. What are you excited about over the next 6 or 12 months or so?
So I think 2024 is going to be a disruptive year for maritime cybersecurity. I think in the past, the discussion with shipping companies was, why do we need it? Now they need it. It's what do we need and how best can we do it? And then how best is in also how simple is it going to be for me? Because they're quite concerned about things going, very difficult. Everything is very difficult. So I think for us as a company, it's like the perfect storm now. We're really, really excited about all the interest that we hear in the market. The shipping companies themselves, in addition to all that awareness, they're also getting more sophisticated in terms of what they need, what they want. So this is also one of we're looking forward to kind of, as I said, you change the discourse from something that's very high level to be able to, okay, so let's talk in much more details and be able to engage more than just with the technical people, but really, as I said, this is cybersecurity is becoming more prominent as a company-wide concern and not just for the problem of the IT manager. So this is also something that we're definitely, I think it's very exciting for us. And then engaging with additional people from the compliance side, because the people that are eventually ultimately responsible for compliance in the shipping companies are not necessarily the IT managers.
This is true.
So you're opening up to the discussion to the operations, to technical teams, a lot more OT, people that are responsible for the OT. Not necessarily the IT department. So all of that is for us, it's a huge, it's elevating the discussion of cybersecurity to really new heights. And we're very excited about it. Yeah.
Awesome.
Hoping to have a lot of business next year.
Good, good, good. Well, it's clearly heading that direction. I think you're right. I think, especially from what we've seen over the last 12, 18 months or so, it's really ramped up in terms of organizations seem to now realize that we've all got the same jersey on, we're on the same team here. It's no longer just an IT issue or an OT issue. And the sooner that we can get to, I guess, education and raising awareness across those different areas and bringing them under one roof, I think the more we can do for that, the better overall. So, well, Shahar, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you running through all that. I know we bounced around from some recent cases and then the regulations and then a bit about what CIDEM does there. So, I'm really glad to have had you on. And if someone wants to get in touch with yourself or CIDEM, where's best for them to do that? You're on LinkedIn, aren't you?
I'm on LinkedIn. Feel free to engage on LinkedIn. You can publish their website, cydome.io, and you can contact us there. And we're happy to continue the discussion. And thank you so much for having me.
Not at
Interesting.
all. It's been great. It's been great. Thank you so much, and I'll speak to you soon.